Exactly when the next show is going to be? Are we doing next Sunday morning?
We're going to explain.
Okay. Also wanted to thank, we got a sponsor, David and Paula Bounzer, sponsored our breakfast this morning and our cheer this morning in honor of Avrami Grohl for his diligence in setting up Shiurim and making sure that everything is set up for everybody. So thank you, David and Paula Bounzer, and thank you, Avrami.
Okay, good morning, everyone. First of all, a tremendous yasher koach to everyone who is moser nefesh not to be in their home for the next few minutes on Erev Sukkos, because I'm sure it's much more meseiros nefesh to be here eating bagels than whatever's going on in preparation. But in all seriousness, first of all, yasher koach to Avrami for putting this together, and yasher koach to everyone for starting off the new year with a sense of initiative and a sense of ambition to be able to learn together. I also think it should be said that part of the growth of our shul, which has really been incredible and tremendous, certainly over the last few years, I think this is a natural next step for us, that we could convene together not only for shiurim of inspiration, shiurim of hashkafa, shiurim for tefillah, shiurim of Tanakh, all of which are wonderful and amazing and fantastic, but that we could also have the chance to come together to just study Torah Sheva'al Peh together, to study, to learn together, to make our way through Masechtos. The Daf HaShavua program, which is what we are initiating here, which the coordinator will be joining us, I think, at the Ne'ilas HaChag, to talk a little bit more about what the goal is and what the program is and how the different components work. And I'll leave that for him, but I think the ha'ara that's important to make here is the goal is not to have a slower-paced daf yomi. The goal is not to just go slower. The goal is to make more of a kinyan, to make more of an acquisition on the mesechta itself. The goal is not just to learn, but also to know. So while we have one shiur a week that'll go through the pshat of the Gemara, and that will be recorded, and you'll have the opportunity to review that if you'd like, there are opportunities available to set up chavrusas at night or whenever is good for you, maybe even on the phone, in order to be able to review the daf together. There will be a chabura once a week with some yunim in the daf. But the real focus that everyone should point themselves to is not to just learn the daf, but to take the opportunity over the course of the week to go over it a few times. So by the time you turn the page to get to the monster at the end of this book, you are really reviewing the daf many, many times, and therefore having the opportunity to really know and internalize and master the limud that we are involved with. Okay, since this morning is Erev Yontif, we're going to move a little bit. We're going to move a little bit ahead. We will not do a major introduction. We might leave that for as we encounter the different sugyos. Meseches Beitza, or Meseches Beya, as it's sometimes called, is a mesechta that is devoted largely to the halachos of Yontif, to the halachos of Muksa, both on Shabbos and on Yontif. And as we are aware, there are some fundamental differences between Yontif and Shabbos. While Yontif is a Mikra Kodesh, it is a day of Isser Malacha, as is Shabbos. The nature of that Isser is different. The punishment for its violation is different. There are a number of exceptions to the Isser Malacha of Yontif that fall under the rubric of what's called Ochel Nefesh, what is necessary to sustain one's well-being, one's life over the course of Yontif, namely the Malachos of cooking and carrying. And we will see a extensive discussion in the Masechta of exactly which Malachos are under the exceptions of Ochel Nefesh for the purpose of the Halachos of Yontif, and which are not. The subject of the beginning of Meseches Beitza relates a lot to the question of Muktzah, and what is the status of Muktzah with respect to Shabbos, with respect to Yontif. Muktzah, even though fundamentally is an Isser Dirabbanan, even though fundamentally there's no carbon you bring for violating the Isser of Muktzah, Muktzah is an Isser Dirabbanan that was given such intensive support, both in anchoring its source in Divrei Kabbalah and as well as in the just the strength of the Takana, which the Rabbanan infused into this very important and central component of Shmiras Shabbos and Shmiras Yontif, that it's known almost as a Ke'ena Doraisa. It's almost like a Doraisa. We treat Muksa very, very seriously. And so we're going to see that that has a number of ramifications. One other point of introduction is that there are a number of different categories of Muksa. There's a Kalisha Malachto L'Isser, which is one of the more commonly encountered areas of Muksa. Kalisha Malachto L'Isser is an item that is used for something Asr and something Mutter usually. There's Muksa Machmas Isser, there's Muksa Machmas Chesron Kis, there's Muksa Machmas Gufo, like a rock. There are many different types of Muksa. One of the categories related to Muksa, a cousin of Muksa, maybe an outgrowth of Muksa, different discussions exactly the nature of the relationship, is something called Nolad. Nolad refers to an entity that did not exist prior to Shabbos or Yontif and has now come into the world on Shabbos and Yontif. Since Muksa really relates to items that you have been, Muksa literally means that you've been, you've detached. Your das is not related to the existence of this item as Shabbos began. It's introduced itself to your consciousness and experience not as a Shabbos entity. A door is in Muksa, because when you begin Shabbos, doors are necessary for the observance of Shabbos. Candles are Muksa when you begin Shabbos. You're Mekatza das from candles. You don't think about candles. Candles are not part of your world. The exception to Muksa is, of course, when something is Mukhan, if something is prepared beforehand. If something is nolad, so that's almost an accentuated muksa, because at least things that are in, under the category of standard muksa, they may exist on Erev Shabbos or before Yontif. It's just that the nature of those items is such that one does not relate to them in the context of observing Shabbos and Yontif. But nolad items, items that didn't even exist at all before Shabbos and Yontif, so there your das would even be further removed, and therefore we're going to see that relates to a certain category of muksa as well. So let's begin the Masechta with the first Mishnah. Beitza shenolda biyom tov. So we have a chicken, and that chicken gives birth to an egg on Yontif. Beishamai omrim teochel. Beishamai says, you can eat that egg. That's not a problem. Ubeisilel omrim, and Beisilel says, lo teochel. You cannot eat this egg. And we're going to explore what the reason is for this machlokas. The Mishnah records three machlokas in between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel in the first Mishnah in Beitza. One relates to the Beitza Shenolda B'Yom Tov. The second is Beis Shammai Omrim Se'or B'Kazayis V'Chametz B'Kekosevis. Having nothing to do with the halachas of Yontif, when it comes to the realm of Chametz, when it comes to the world of eating or getting benefit from Chametz, the Torah describes different categories of Chametz. Chametz, when we use just the term chametz, so we use chametz to refer to everything that's prohibited on Pesach. Chametz, as a halakhic term, refers to a particular nature of mixture of flour and water, with the potential to turn to leavened chametz, and the shear, the amount of chametz that's usher according on Pesach, according to Beis Shammai, is the amount of a kosevis, the amount of like a kosevis, like a date. But the amount that of Se'or is a more amplified form of Chametz. Se'or is a more intense form of Chametz. It has a more aggressive leavening agent associated with it. And so therefore, Se'or, even B'Kazayis, is usher even with the smallest amount of Kazayis. The Shiur Amar, Kazayis, Kekoseves, and then Kebetza, right? Kebetza is the larger amount. U'Beisilu Omrim Zebezeb, both Se'or and Chametz are usher B'Kazayis. Okay, third halacha. Hashochet chaya ba'of. If one slaughters a chaya, a wild animal, or an of, or a bird, biyomtif, which is mutter to do, because it's mutter to do malacha for the purposes of ochel nefesh, who wouldn't want a very fresh, right? Who wouldn't want a very fresh piece of chicken? So you slaughter that behemah chaya, just not the behemah. The case of the Mishnah is not a behemah, the chaya ba'of. Beis Shammai Omrim, so we know there's a mitzvah in the Torah that when you slaughter a chay of oaf, this mitzvah actually does not apply to a behema, that you have a mitzvah called kisui hadam. You have to go ahead and cover the blood that emerges at the outset of that shechita with dirt, with sand, with something from the ground. And that's the mitzvah of kisui hadam. So shechita you can do because you need that for ochel nefesh. You need that in order to be able to eat a fresh meal on Yontif. But what about the kisoy adam? How do you handle this dirt? That's not necessarily germane for the actual eating of this meal, but it's integral to the overall process of halachic shechita. And so therefore, says Beishama Yachbor Bedekar V'yechasef. You don't have any dirt available. You take your shovel, you dig out some dirt, and you cover over the dam. Ubeisilo Omrim, no. Lo yishchot eliyim kein hayolo efer muchon mibo yom. Don't do shechita unless you have some sort of dirt that's available from before Yantif. If it's available, then you'll do shechita. That dirt is now muchan. It's now prepared from before Yantif. You can then go ahead and use it to cover the blood, and you're good to go. Umodim, but they both agree, Beis Hillel is modim to Beis Shammai, she'im shachat, that if you went ahead and did this shechita, she'yachbar bedekar v'yechase, that you could go ahead and cover it. And then the Mishnah has one final comment, which grammatically seems to be linked to the previous phrase, but as we'll see in the Gemara, maybe an actual independent but related phrase, she'efer kira muchanhu, because the dirt that comes out of a kira, out of an oven, is considered prepared, is considered muchan for this purpose, and we'll explore that a little bit later. Asks the Gemara b'maya skina. So now we're focused exclusively on the machlokas between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel about the Beitza Shenolda B'Yom Tov. Yes.
Before you get to the edge, if you don't cover the blood, is the chicken treif? Is the chicken edible?
No. The chicken is not treif, but you have not done the mitzvah of kisu yadam. Correct. So B'maya Skinan, says the Gemara, what kind of case are we dealing with here? We're now focused exclusively on the Beitza Shenolda B'Yom Tov. Okay? The Beitza was born on Yom Tov. And we'll have to remember that Beis Shammai says you can eat it. Beis Hillel says lo tocha, that you can't eat it. Very often in a machlokas between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, Beis Hillel is the mekel. So here, Beis Hillel is the machmir. So let's try to remember that. Sometimes Beis Hillel is the machmir, right? So Beis Hillel, because it's important to keep the opinion straight, because the Gemara is going to go through a little bit of a cheshbon. So the Maya Skinan, what kind of chicken are we dealing with here? So if we're dealing with chickens, can be designated for one of two purposes. This is true in today's world as well. Chickens are either raised for the purposes of slaughter, right? That's not a fun childhood, but it is what it is, right? Or chickens are raised for the purpose of laying eggs, right? Where I went to yeshiva in Beit Meir, they had large chicken coops, and you were able to go into the chicken coops and you could buy eggs from the chickens, from the people who raised the chickens. So the So, what kind of chicken are we dealing with? So if this is a chicken that's being raised for the purposes of eating, so we're beefing it up and we're making sure, I don't know, we're feeding it barbecue sauce and making sure that, you know, when it's ready to go, it'll taste nice and good. So if it's omedes la'achila, ma'ita mayu de Beis Hillel, why in the world would Beis Hillel not allow us to eat it? Why would Beis Hillel paskin lo te'ochel when uchlo de ifrisu? The beitza, the egg, is simply part of the chicken itself. The entire chicken, in its totality, including the egg that may be in its stomach, is omedes la'achila. If I would slaughter this chicken, I could eat the whole thing. So why would you focus on one small component of the chicken and designate that as halachically problematic? We've already preempted that designation by recognizing that the chicken is standing to be eaten, to be consumed. So that Beis Hillel's shita would not make sense. Ella, so it must be, b'tarnegoles ha'amedes legado beitzim. We're talking about a tarnegoles that is standing for the purpose of just producing eggs. Now that chicken on Yontif is muksah, because after all, what purpose could it possibly serve on Yontif? You can't slaughter it and eat it. It's like general animals, right? Animals are generally muksah. So my tamayu de Beis Shammai. So hold on. What would be the reason of Beis Shammai that it's mutter if it's a tarnegoles ha'omedes legado beitzim? So Beis Shammai says that you're allowed to eat the beitza. Why would you be allowed to eat the beitza? It's part of a chicken that has no purpose on Yontif. So says the Gemara, well, maybe muksa, it's muksa. So says the Gemara, umay kushya. Now the Gemara interjects a challenge to that assumption about Beis Shammai. Your assumption in this question, right, this whole question is predicated on the assumption that Beis Shammai embraces the notion of muksa. So now we're going to blow your mind. Dilma Beis Shammai less lehu muksa. Maybe Beis Shammai does not hold of the institution of muksa. The Meiri points out that nobody rejects completely the institution of muksa, but there is a machlokas tanoim, as Rashi says, between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon in Maseches Shabbos, whether or not muksa is as ubiquitous a category as relating to the observance of Shabbos as we relate to it or not. Rabbi Yehuda's of the opinion that there is muksa. Rabbi Shimon's of the opinion that there is not muksa. So why don't we simply assume that Beis Shammai holds like the opinion of Rabbi Shimon that there's no muksa? So if there's no muksa, so even if it's a tarnagolas omedes legadol beitzim, and even though the beitza is coming out of the tarnagolas, teyochel, Beis Shammai says, you're allowed to eat it. You're allowed to eat it because he paskins like Rabbi Shimon that there is no muksa. The tarnagolas isn't muksa. The beitza is not muksa. Nothing's muksa. And Beis Hillel holds there is muksa. And therefore, like the sheet of Rabbi Yehuda, and therefore you're not allowed to eat it. So the Gemara says, why wouldn't we make that assumption about Beis Shammai, thus undermining that original challenge to his shita? Kasalta daitan, because we assumed afilu man deshari b'muksa b'nolad os. So we explained in our introduction, even if you follow the opinion of Rabbi Shimon that there is no muksa, it's possible that there's no muksa when we're dealing with an item that was in existence as Shabbos or Yontif began. But when we're dealing with the category of nolad, nolad means it's being introduced into the world for the first time. So when we're dealing with the category of nolad, even Rabbi Shimon would agree that there is a category of nolad, since our Mishnah is not a case of standard muksa, but it's a case of nolad. Therefore, our Mishnah, Beis Shammai gets up in our Mishnah and he says that teyachel, you can go ahead. I'm sorry, that lo teyachel, that you. Teyachel, Beis Shammai says you can go ahead and eat it. Deshari sokadai afilu man deshari b'miksa b'nolad aser. But when it comes to nolad, it's aser, and therefore we're questioning Beis Shammai. So we restore the question. My tamayo de Beis Shammai. So what's the reason of Beis Shammai? So again, just to summarize where we are, we're dealing with the tarnagolas haomedes legado beitzim. It's tarnagolas that's really being raised for beitzim, and we want to know how could Beis Shammai say teyachel when it's a case of muksa. Maybe Beis Shammai rejects muksa. No, even if Beis Shammai rejects muksa, following the opinion of Rabbi Shimon, that's only by regular muksa. But when it comes to the category of nolad, there would be a problem. And since this is nolad, we are left mystified how Beis Shammai could go ahead and allow you to eat this egg. Amar Rabbi Nachman. So the Gemara is going to give a series of suggestions from Amoraim how we could resolve this Mishnah with the larger context of the world of Muksa as we understand it. So Amar Rav Nachman says, Rav Nachman, l'olam tarnagolas omedes legadol beitzim. We are talking about a tarnagolas omedes legadol beitzim. We're going to stick with that assumption in our interpretation of the Mishnah. Vide islay muksa, islay nolad, vide lesley muksa, lesley nolad. So says Rabbi Nachman that assumption that challenged our original assumption, that challenged our question on Beis Shammai, is erroneous. That's not true. That anybody who holds of muksa also holds of nolat. Anyone who rejects muksa rejects nolat. So Rabbi Yehuda agrees that there's a larger category of muksa and there's an isser of nolat. Beis Hillel follows his opinion, and that's why Tarnagolas Omedes Legadol Beitzim is lo teachel, because it's nolat, or even because it's muksa. And Beis Shammai follows the opinion of Rabbi Shimon, who follows the opinion that there is no muksa, there's no muksa, and there's no nolad. And our assumption that nolad should be inherently more machmir than muksa is not true. So Beis Shammai k'Rabbi Shimon, Beis Hillel k'Rabbi Yehuda, and that's it. Beis Shammai follows Rabbi Shimon, and Beis Hillel follows Rabbi Yehuda. Umi amar Rav Nachman hachi. So now the Gemara asks on this tradition that we have of Rav Nachman's resolution in interpreting the machlokas between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. Did Rav Nachman really agree to such a resolution? After all, v'hotnan, there's a Mishnah. The Mishnah says, Beis Shammai omrim magbian me'al ha'shulchan atzamos v'klipin. Let's say you're eating your Shabbos lunch, and all that's left on the table now are bones and shells and empty everything, right? That's what's left on the table. So you want to clear the table. So those things are muksa. Those things have no purpose on Shabbos. So Beis Shammai is of the opinion that you could go ahead and just remove them from the table. Beis Hillel is of the opinion, misalik es hatav lakulo minara. No. You have to take the entire tray or tablecloth, whatever they're on, lift the whole thing up together, which has the bones and their shells, and it also has maybe stuff that's left over that's good, that people just still didn't eat, and, you know, wave the whole thing off. So that sounds, that original text sounds like Beis Shammai is less concerned about Muksa, and Beis Hillel is more concerned about Muksa. Well, that does align with our perspective of Rav Nachman's interpretation of the Machlokes Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. However, Amar Rav Nachman himself had a different Mesorah in this Mishnah, and he says, Anu ein lanu ela Beis Shammai k'Rabbi Yehuda Beis Hillel k'Rabbi Shimon. That no, that this text is corrupt, and really Beis Shammai follows the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda, and Beis Hillel follows the opinion of Rabbi Shimon. Well, now we have a Beferish Mishnah, where we have a case of Muksa. We have Beis Shammai following the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda. That's the opinion that there is Muksa, and therefore the corresponding opinion in our Mishnah should be, since, after all, we've aligned Nolad and Muksa according to the thinking of Rav Nachman, the corresponding opinion in our Mishnah should be that there is Muksa, so you can't eat it, but Beis Shammai says you can. And he has Beis Hillel following the opinion of Rabbi Shimon, which should mean that you can eat it, and Beis Hillel says you can't. So that's a challenge to introducing Rav Nachman as a resolution to how to understand Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. So Amar Lecha Rav Nachman, so the Gemara answers for Rav Nachman. The Gemara says, no, we can deal with what seems to be a disparity in Rav Nachman's approach between how he interprets this Mishnah in Shabbos and how we are suggesting he would interpret this Mishnah in Beitzah. Because what's the difference between these two Mishnayos? Their context. One is with respect to Shabbos, and the other is respect to Yontif. Gabi Shabbos, with respect to Shabbos, which was the Mishnah we just introduced, this Stam Lon Tanik Rabbi Shimon. When we're dealing with the halachos of Shabbos, so the Stam Mishnayos follow the sheet of Rabbi Shimon. How do we know that? The Tanan, because we learned in a Mishnah, at the very, very end of Masechah Shabbos, Mechadchen es adeluin, you're allowed to cut the gourds, lifnei abehema, v'asanevelo lifnei aklovim. You have gourds, which are not really edible without being cut. You have nevela, which didn't even really, which is treif, which is, well, it's nevela, right? Which is something that's been dead without shechita, and that's introduced itself on Shabbos, and you want to feed it to the animal. These things are presumably muksa, and the Mishnah says, you can do this, you can feed it to your animal. Mukim la lebeis hillel k'rabbi shimon. So in the context of Shabbos, since in the context of Shabbos, a Stam Mishnah, which means a Mishnah that does not introduce any opinions, or really, in this context, it's the Tanna Kamma, because I think Rabbi Yehuda is in that Mishnah, right? But when you have a Stam opinion in a Mishnah, so that Mishnah assumes the approach of Rabbi Shimon, so therefore, Rav Nachman generalized from the context of Shabbos to the larger context of Shabbos. So therefore, he assumes that when we are referring to the halachas of Muksa on Shabbos, we follow the opinion of Rabbi Shimon. And therefore, going back to our case of the shells and the bones on the table, since that was a Stam Mishnah in the context of Shabbos, Rabbi Nachman's emendation of the Mishnah to designate Beis Hillel's opinion like Rabbi Shimon is consistent. And therefore, that's the context of Shabbos. However, aval, ding, gabi yontif, when it comes to yontif, distam lontanik Rabbi Yehuda, where the Mishnayos make the assumption that the general opinion follows Rabbi Yehuda, how do we know that? Ditznan, because we learned in a Mishnah, ein mavkiyin eitzim min akaros lo min akaros shenishbaru biyomtov. Let's say you want to make a fire on yontif, right? You want to cook on yontif, so you're not allowed to break off of wood from beams or things that are broken off from beams that were not prepared for this purpose before Yom Tov. So Mukim Lola Beisilo Rabbi Yehuda. So you see in the context of Yontif we're Machmir, and we follow the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda that there is Muksa. So we have this fascinating distinction. In the context of Shabbos, we assume the opinion of Rabbi Shimon that there is no Muksa. And therefore, Rabbi Nachman aligns Beis Hillel with Rabbi Shimon, because Beis Hillel is the traditional approach, he aligns with Rabbi Shimon, and therefore there is no Muksa. And that's why Rabbi Nachman says, according to Beis Hillel on Shabbos, we follow Rabbi Shimon. But when it comes to Yontif, the Stam Mishnayos follow Rabbi Yehuda, that there is Muksa. So therefore, Rabbi Nachman's Shita is resolved, because again, if you hold of Muksa, you hold of Nolad. If you don't hold of Muksa, you don't hold of Nolad. In the context of Yontif, Beis Hillel paskins like Rabbi Shimon that there is no muksa, that there is no nolad, and therefore beitza shenolda biyamtif, even though it's a tarnegolis haomedes legado beitzim. I'm sorry, Beis Shammai, even a tarnegolis that's omedes legado, even though it's a tarnegolis omedes legado beitzim, Beis Shammai would say lo teachel because on yamtif he's machmir, and Beis Hillel would say, I'm sorry, Beis Shammai would say teachel. Apologize, right? Beis Shammai would say teyachel, since it's yontif, you can go ahead and eat it. And Beis Hillel would say lo teyachel, because both by muksa and by nolad, we follow the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda when it comes to the context of yontif. And that's the Beis Hillel, mukim la, Beis Hillel, k'Rabbi Yehuda. So then the Gemara asks the obvious question, michdi, but hold on, man stami l'mas nisan, Rebbe, why would the Mishnayos themselves make this very strange distinction? Right? We have an editor of the Mishnah. The editor is Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, right? We spent a lot of the Pirkei Avos shir this past month talking about Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, right? So Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi is the editor of the Mishnayos. So his job was to create some sense of unity amongst the Mishnayos. Why would he paskin like Rabbi Yehuda in the laws of Shabbos and like Rabbi Shimon in the laws of Shabbos and Rabbi Yehuda in the laws of Yontif? So the Gemara says something very interesting. The Gemara says something which is probably, to us, a little bit counterintuitive in the way we sometimes relate to halacha. The Gemara says that when it comes to Amri, we say, Shabbos dechamira. What's more chamer, Shabbos or Yontif? Shabbos is more chamer. Shabbos has an Isser Skila, Yontif is an Isser Lav. Shabbos has no exceptions of Malacha. Yontif, we know, you're allowed to cook, you're allowed to carry. Shabbos is much more chamor. So Shabbos, that's already more chamor, v'lo asi lizuzlei, and a person would not come to be mezalzel Shabbos because you're already, Shabbos internally is edified in terms of its sense of reverence that we have for Shabbos. So saw some luck, Rabbi Shimon. So Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi said, you know what, when it comes to the machlokas about muksa, will paskin like Rabbi Shimon. After all, the whole point of muksa is to try to distinguish Shabbos from days of chol. That the Rambam gives three different reasons for muksa, but the point of muksa is to give Shabbos an extra geder, an extra fence, right, to make sure we don't even come close to doing something improper on Shabbos. So Shabbos, we're already on edge. We already know that we have to be so careful. So there, we can minimize that gather, we can minimize that boundary. But demeko, but Yom Tov, but when it comes to Yontif, dekil v'asli zuzoi bay, but what Yontif, where we're already like, it's just Yontif, you know, you're allowed to cook, you're allowed to carry, you're probably allowed to watch TV, you're probably allowed to look on your phone. I mean, after all, you can carry, you can cook, you can, you know, Yontif, it's just Yontif. And then Yom Tov Sheni, you know, like already going to be Asi Lezuzle will come to be Mezalzel the Yontif. So there, Sasam Lak Rabbi Yehuda needed more Chizuk. And therefore, the machmir. And this is an interesting distinction, because we would think, no, we would think when we're more afraid of the fire, when we're more afraid of the Isser, we should be more machmir. When we're less afraid of the Isser, we should be less machmir. So there are rules and regulations about how the Rabbanon make takanos. And what's interesting is sometimes those takanos relate to the fear of how people will relate to things. And sometimes those takanos emanate from an understanding of where people stand as it is. And so, since the Rabbanon appreciated that there was already a reverence there, therefore they were more makel. So therefore, according to Rebbe, by Shabbos we paskin like Rabbi Shimon, and therefore Beis Hillel follows Rabbi Shimon in the case of the egozim, in the case of the bones and the nuts. And by Yontif we paskin like Rabbi Yehuda, because people could come to be mezalzel Yontif, so we're more machmir. So we have the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda, we're machmir on muksa, we're machmir on nolad, and therefore Beis Hillel follows Rabbi Yehuda, Beis Hillel follows the Stam Mishnah, and therefore in our Mishnah, Beis Hillel will go ahead and paskin lo te'ochel, it's a case of yontif. So then the Gemara says, b'mayu kimta b'tarnegolas almedes legado beitzim u'mishem muksa. So the Gemara says, why did you go ahead and establish the Mishnah as talking about the Tarnagolis Omedes Legado Beitzim and because of Muksa? Right? You did it because of Muksa. Ihachi Adem Iflagi Bebeitza Liflagu Betarnagolis. So why do we have this crazy case where the egg is born, right? Which is not even the most common scenario. Why don't you have the machlokas beisham beis hillel about the tarnagolas itself? After all, according to Rav Nachman, in whose shita we're right now living and breathing, muksa and nolad are equal. So if muksa and nolad are equal, why have the machlokas about the beitza? Have the machlokas about the chicken itself. The machlokas is if the chicken itself is muksa. So who cares? And what'll flow from the chicken is the beitza. So what's the problem? So the Gemara says, no. Lo diacha kochem de beis shamai. Because we wanted to tell you how extreme beis shamai's heter is. Since intuitively we would assume that nolad is more machmir than regular muksa. The fact that binolad shari, that beis shamai matirs the egg, even though the egg is a case of nolad, so in order to express the extent of beis shamai's kula, the Mishnah went ahead and used the case of beitza. Because beitza is the more machmir scenario. Beitza is the more... So the Gemara says, well, hold on. If your concern is here depicting the machlokas in terms that accentuate the eccentricities of each of the shitos, so then what about the tarnagolas, and then introduce the tarnagolas as the case? Lo diacha kochan de beis hillel. And this way you'll tell the more mechudish case of beis hillel, de muktzo asiri, that beis hillel holds, not only are you lo te'ochel in the beitza, which is a case of nolad, but even in the case of muksa, we're going to not allow you to eat the beitza, even though it's not even nolad. It's not nolad. It's only a case of muksa. So the Gemara is bothered by this. Gemara is no way out. The chitema, maybe you want to say, koach de teira adif. So maybe you want to say, a very famous phrase in the Gemara and beitza. Maybe you want to say, well, when we're faced with an opportunity to present shitos that emphasize the chiddush of chumrah, and present shitos, we can only present it one way, the Gemara is assuming. So when we're faced with the opportunity to present shitos that either accentuate the chumrah or accentuate the chiddush of the kula, koach de hetera adif. What does it mean, koach de hetera adif? Rashi says, koach de hetera adif means it's harder to be mekel, right? You approach a rav and you ask them a shayla. So the easiest thing in the world for the rabbi to say is, oh, we don't know, usser, right? It's probably usser. I don't know, but it's probably usser, right? So that's an easy way out. You don't have to know a lot to be machmir, but to be mekel, you have to really know something. To be mekel, you have to go ahead and you have to really understand what's going on, right? We're told, mishumi guna ikilu be'rabbanan, right? That when it comes to issues of iguna, where we always look for kulas, right? So, I don't know, Rabbi Weissman will correct me, but I think Siman Yud Zayin and Eben Ezer is the halachas of Iguna. I think it's one of the largest simanim in all of Shulchan Aruch, right? Why? And if you look at the Otzer HaPoskim, it's like, you know, half the thing is on Siman Yud Zayin. And the tshuvas that are on Agunas is more than anything. Why? Because it's very easy to say, oh, she's an Aguna, let's be machmir. But to be mekel on a din of Eishes Ish, that requires a real sense of gaonis. That requires, it's much harder to be mekel. People think it's easier to be mekel. It's harder to be mekel. So mishum did koach to hetera adif. So the Gemara is suggesting that maybe since it's more mechudosh to say the kula, so that's why we introduce the case where it's more mechudosh that even the beitza, right? That even the beitza that was born on Yontif is mutter, right? That's a bigger deal. So the Gemara says, no, that's not a good answer. V'neflog b'tarvayhu. Because the Gemara says we have another option that we can present the machlokas with both of them. Tarnagolis, what would the Mishnah look like? Tarnagolis ha'amendes legado beitzim. He, u beitza saw, a tarnagolis that's raised for the purpose of beitzim, the tarnagolis and its beitzim, beis shamai omrim teyachel, hu beis hillel omrim lo teyachel. And that would portray all of the different shitos, right? So Tosis already points out that the Gemara does not every time we say mishum iguna, the Gemara does not every time we say koch detera adif suggest we reformulate the din to include both. But here all we have to do is add one or two words. So it's a really easy fix. So add one or two words and you're able to explain everything. So the Gemara says, based on, it's interesting, we were with Rav Nachman the whole way. We were We were dealing with the challenges to Rav Nachman, the challenges to the Stiras and other things Rav Nachman said. We were championing Rav Nachman, and based on this, based on how the Mishnah presents the cases and whether or not the Mishnah is really presenting the most mechudash case in the most eloquent way, the Gemara moves in a different direction. The Gemara says, Ella Amar Rabba. Now the Gemara gives this second approach to understanding our Mishnah. No more Rav Nachman. Says Rabba, La'olam b'tarnegolas ha'omedes la'achila. Let's go back to the original supposition that we rejected. And that was that the tarnegolas is a chicken that was omedes la'achila. Okay, so what did we say about a chicken that was omedes la'achila? Uchud de'ifrisu. The baits is part of the chicken. The chicken's mutter. The baits is mutter. What's the problem? Says the Gemara, says Rabba, we're dealing with a very specific case. We're dealing with the case where Yontif fell after Shabbos. Yontif is on Sunday. What's different about Yontif being on Sunday? Umishum hachana. The concern here is a concern of hachana. Because of a rabba, and the Gemara explains, because rabba holds, kol beitza de misyalda ha'inna me'et mol gamrla, that any beitza that's born today was finished yesterday. That means that if today is Yontif, when was the Beitza finished baking in that chicken? Right? On Shabbos. The Rabba Letameh. And Rabba goes according to his reasoning. The Amar Rabba, because Rabba says, My Dichsiv, the Torah says, V'haya b'yom ha'shishi. And it was on Friday. V'yechinu was asher yaviyu. And they would prepare everything they'd have to bring in for Shabbos. Chol mechin l'Shabbos. You can prepare on Chol for Shabbos. The Chol mechin l'Yontif. And you can prepare on Chol for Yontif. The Ein Yontif mechin l'Shabbos. The Yontif cannot prepare for Shabbos. The Ein Shabbos mechin l'Yontif. And you're certainly not allowed to prepare on Shabbos for the purpose of Yontif. So, if you're not allowed to prepare on Shabbos for the purpose of Yontif, and Rashi explained, this is not only talking about a hachana, a preparation biyadayim that you do with your own hands, but this is even talking about a preparation that happens klape shmaya. Even it happened independent of your hands. So the preparation of this egg finished cooking in the chicken when? On Shabbos. Now it comes out, ding, right? It comes out of the slot machine on Yontif, on Sunday. You're going to eat this egg. You're eating an egg on Yontif that was prepared by Hashem and the chicken on Shabbos. That is what we call Hachana de Rabba. That's considered an Isser of Hachana. So that's why you're not allowed to eat the egg. That's the problem with the egg. Amar le Abaye, Ela Meyata. So says Abaye, hold on. If that's true, if that's how we understand the Isser here, Ela Meyata, Yom Tov Be'alma Tishtari. So that means our Mishnah's halacha is only true of lote achel. That's only true when you are on a Sunday Yontif. And that should be clear in the Mishnah. But any other time Yontif falls out, like this year, so if you go home and you have a chicken at home and it's omedes la'achila and it produces an egg, it should be mutter to eat. Basil says it's aser, and we're assuming that we're dealing with a case of omedes la'achila. So says the Gemara, Gzeira Mishum Yom Tov Achara Shabbos. We make a Gzeira. And we make a Gzeira. You can't eat an egg that's born on Yontif, because if you get used to eating eggs that are born on Yontif on Wednesday and Thursday and Friday, then you'll end up eating an egg that's born on Yontif on Sunday that was really made on Shabbos. So that's a Gzeira. So that's an Issa Doraisa. So says the Gemara, well, what about Shabbos de Alma? Then what about a regular Shabbos? Right? Says the Gemara Tishtari. Gezerah Mishum Shabbos Achar Yontif. That's a Gezerah because of Shabbos Achar Yontif. You're not allowed to be Mechin from Yontif to Shabbos, right? This Gemara, Tosis points out, creates a challenge for us because we know we're Mechin from Yontif to Shabbos all the time. How are we Mechin from Yontif to Shabbos? We make something called an Erev Tavshilin, right? Erev Tavshilin is a rabbinic solution to the problem of Achana. However, if the problem of Achana is biblical in nature, if it's a Doraisa problem, then how does the Rabbanan get up and introduce Erev Tavshilin? So Tosis points out, based on the Gemara in Pesachim, that we have a principle called Hoil. Hoil means that since on Yontif, it's possible that guests will show up at any time, right? I can vouch for this, right? People can walk into your house anytime, day or night, right? So you have to be ready to serve them food, or you might have to call upon to cook food for them, to give them a good meal. So therefore, the cooking that you do on Yom Tov, not really for Shabbos, it's really potentially for Yom Tov. You're not allowed to add, or you're not allowed to anticipate. So that's already an Issa D'Rabbanan, and that already we can circumvent through the principle of Erev Tavshilin. Right? That's why the halacha is that when you do the prep on Yom Tov for Shabbos through Erev Tavshilin, you're supposed to try to do it a little bit earlier in the day. Not earlier in the day, 11 o'clock in the morning, but not really, if you can avoid it, to try not to cook all the way up until Shabbos itself, because if you think about it, you're not giving yourself enough time for somebody to come in, right? The shear is the amount of time it would take teenage boys to walk into your house and eat, right? So however long that shear is, right? So a normal person, right, would, you'd need at least a couple hours, right? But guys show up, they're like, we're hungry, right? We're hungry means what? We have to heat up? No, just give it to me, right? So you have to give yourself at least
lentil soup.
At least something, at least some zman that the orchim could come. So gzeira. Umi gazrina, and do we really make this gzeira? How the Gemara challenges the gzeira altogether, but Tani will learn it in a braisa. Hashochet is a tarnegolis. Let's say you're shechting chickens on Yom Tov. Umatza babeitzim. You shech the chicken and you get a surprise, right? Like a cereal box, right? You put your hand inside. Lo and behold, it's a free car or whatever, right? They used to put, now I don't think they put toys in cereal boxes as much anymore, right?
Now you have to collect the codes and it's in the
method. Thank you. Right. Now it involves, right? You have to scan and it's much more complicated. So it used to be, right? You stuck your hand in the box, out came the car. And you fought with your siblings over it. That was over this 20-cent item, right? And you told your parents which cereal to buy based on. So the Gemara says, "Shochet es tarnegolis." You shech the tarnegolis. You think all you're going to have is chicken, and surprise, bonus, you're going to have chicken and eggs, right? And you find in there an egg. So the Gemara says, "Batz basic kimuros mutaros lachlan biyom tov." You're allowed to eat these eggs on Yom Tov. So the Gemara says, I don't understand. We should make a gzeira on these eggs also. After all, a gzeira, even if this yontif that we're talking about is on a Tuesday, is on a Sunday night, on a Monday, we should make a gzeira that you can't eat that egg, because if you were to get a hold of that egg on a Sunday yontif, that would be a problem of achana from Shabbos. And the Rashi gets into the whole discussion, is this a question of gzeira le gzeira? Amar Lei, the Gemara says, Beitzim gimuros b'mei imon milsa delo shchichahi. Finding a whole egg in the chicken when you shecht it, that's not such a common thing to happen. U'milsa delo shchicha lo gazru bo rabbanim. And the rabbis don't make zeros, or maybe can't make zeros, on things that are milsa delo shchicha. I tried to find out how common this is. I went online and asked... how common is slaughtering a chicken and finding an egg? And the first 300 websites are all about how terrible it is to slaughter chickens. So I couldn't even get, I just didn't have the patience to whatever. But if someone wants to do the research to find out how common that really is, apparently in the times of the Gemara that wasn't so common. So the Rabbanan were not gozer. So that's the opinion of Rabba. Okay, that completes our first blot of Beitza, and everyone should have a wonderful season.
It's interesting. There's only two Yom Tov that can fall out with Shabbos. Rosh Hashanah can't.
Yeah, sorry. Just, oh, sorry. Yeah.
The next shear will take place in Motzei Shabbos, and the Shabbos
Sukkah. Oh!
Surprise. Shabbos is Kavod, Rosh Hashanah Rabba at 9 o'clock.
9 p.m.
Weather permitting. Also, if the shear is recorded, it will be on the Yom Yisrael website, hopefully by today or tomorrow. And also, thank you, Ron Tobin, for running this morning's game of bagels. Wow. Also, show of hands for benching.
Okay, good. Okay, that's a good shot.
Just push that.
Because, yeah.